This interview is part of a thought leadership study created by KPMG in collaboration with FT Longitude.
It's not that suddenly we wake up and we realize that economics didn't work, and it's not that we realize that we were wrong and globalization was a mistake. We realize that all the benefits of globalization came with a cost. And this cost was that in a global world, we have global problems. If we really want to fix this problem, we need more cooperation, because these global risks are not going to go away.
Today's global trade flows and supply chains are increasingly fragmented. Companies need to be flexible and fleet-footed if they are to withstand unpredictable shocks. Supply chain resilience is already proving to be a rate-determining factor. It is forcing leaders to carefully consider the balance and trade-offs between cost, risk, and agility. I'm Sean Kearns, Director of Strategy at FT Longitude, and in this series, we consider the how and why of strategic shoring and the critical factors that will determine its long-term success. Today, we consider how geopolitics is driving the need for supply chain flexibility. Joining me is Roberto Duran Fernandez, Research Professor at Tecnológico de Monterrey. Roberto, thank you for joining us. Could you begin by giving our listeners a brief summary of how geopolitics are really reshaping supply chains and have done in recent times?
Actually, it has been very interesting times in the last 3-4 years after the pandemics. And I like to go back like 20 years before, when all these globalization trends started. And as you might know, the global economy entered in the late 90s in this hyper-globalization phase, in which every piece of production can be produced in the other side of the world and then shipped to the other side. All these trends were known as offshoring. Many companies in the US and in Europe closed their factories, opened new factories, and given the competitive advantage that these countries have, it was very efficient and cost-efficient to produce over there and then send these products to the supply chains and to the final consumers in the Western world. Many changes started to happen, and maybe the first one, it has nothing to do with geopolitics, it has to do with pure economics. And the costs, especially labor costs in East Asia and China, started to increase in the first half of the last decade. So many companies started to figure out if this offshore model was the most efficient and the most economic way of producing things. With the pandemic, the environment changed completely, because suddenly we realized that the borders still exist. We get used to this hyper-globalization where borders were almost non-existent. However, with the pandemics, countries started to raise these trade barriers. We understood that national borders were still relevant, and many supply chains get into very severe disruptions. And companies started to figure out if these cost-saving models, these just-in-time production models, had to go to another place. And this place was to think about just-in-case rather than just-in-time, and trying to figure out that maybe resilience and not cost efficiency was the most important factor that supply chains had to take into account. So this is like a brief summary of what happened in the last year with supply chain.
Thank you, Roberto, for such a fulsome history. Where does that leave us now? As you mentioned, onshoring has been not necessarily replaced, but nearshoring and reshoring have come to the fore. What are some of the drivers, factors that are influencing where companies are looking to maybe relocalize or change their nodes of their supply chain?
Yeah, maybe the most important thing that we have to consider is that many companies started to believe that the problem was having this offshore model and having these long intercontinental supply chains. And many companies start to figure out that maybe shorter supply chains was a way to build resilience against all these geopolitical, environmental, sanitary shocks that we believe. There are a lot of conversations, for example, in the semiconductor space. And in the U.S., there are companies actively trying to open locations in the U.S. and trying to reshore this production from East Asia to, for example, Arizona, to Texas, to California. There is another model, and the model is, well, maybe the problem is not itself the outsourcing of some parts of the supply chains to other countries. Maybe we can take advantage of this competitive advantage, but maybe the issue is that we have to get shorter the supply chain. And this led us to the model of nearshoring. As the supply chain at the factories are closer, we have more control on that. We learned, for example, from the pandemic that it was easier to travel from the US to Mexico, even in the peak of the pandemic. So the idea is to have more control on this supply chain given the distance, the short distance. But this is not the only model. Maybe the model is not distance, but the model is the political alignment of these new actors. And the problem is not having these intercontinental supply chains, but having a country that maybe is not as reliable as we think. And maybe the problem is the intellectual property right. And maybe the problem is rule of law. So why not having these deals with other countries that are more politically aligned with our values and economic incentives? For example, India, for example, Indonesia, for example, South Korea. This model is called ally shoring, and it has also been in the media for a long time. So these are three ideas that have been there. However, there may be another one. And the fourth one has to do a lot, for example, with the pandemic. And in the pandemic, we learned that one day we have this sanitary crisis and we need vaccines. And the thing is that we cannot import vaccines. So maybe we need to have some autonomy and so self-sufficiency in vaccines. So maybe another model is to identify critical supply of these supply chains and produce them regardless, locally, regardless the location or regardless the business model or the business case of producing them in another country. For example, critical supply chains in medicine, in healthcare. Some countries are talking about self-sufficiency in food. So these are conversations that we believe that were not relevant anymore, but the pandemic made this conversation relevant again.
How difficult is it for organizations to know if this is working? So in other words, how do they understand whether they have created financial value and growth from their reshoring or their shoring strategy?
I think that there are some ways to notice that. Maybe the first one is in terms of the reliability that they are building. And I can tell you, like, since the pandemic, we have a couple of supply shocks. For example, the first one was these tariffs of China. The another one was the pandemic itself. Another one was these problems that we have in the Suez Canal, for example, with this ship, the Evergreen, that was locked and couldn't move in the Suez Canal. We had another shock in Panama Canal, as I told you, because of the drought. So it's not that we do not have this shock. So maybe the best test is that if companies manage to reconfigure their supply chains and in the next shock that they are more frequent, they manage to keep the integrity of the supply chain, I think that that's a big success. And eventually, this success will matter financially, because not closing your supply chains, being able to maintain the continuity of operation, it's something that eventually would look in the balance sheet of the companies. However, it's not something that you can see in the short term, in the next report of the next quarter. And I think that that's the most difficult part for managers and for CEOs and for CFOs, that the results are not in the short term and the result will be part of a long-term strategy. And maybe the problem again is that if you make a mistake, the results we'll see in the long term. And maybe the results are not catastrophic if you make a mistake, but surely some companies may be seeing some impact into their profits if they do not manage to adapt to this new configuration of the global supply chain.
And you talked about earlier a new type of risk management. What you've just described calls for a different type of leadership as well, doesn't it?
Yes. And maybe the most difficult part is that given the uncertainty that we are facing, we need a new way to manage uncertainty. In economics, for us, in the financial world, it's very easy to manage uncertainty, and uncertainty translating to risk when you can have a probability to this uncertainty. There is a probability of 10% of having a disruption of the supply chain, but the problem is that we do not know this number. And if we do not know this number, we cannot price that number, and we do not know a rate for that number, and we do not know an equity premium for that number, and that's a problem. And fortunately, we have some tools to manage with this uncertainty. We have scenario planning, and this scenario plan is trying to engage in more strategic vision. And specifically in finance, it's not a way of only having a number, of not having the return and the risk, not only having the mean of the return and the standard deviation in technical terms. It's only trying to have this imagination of imagine different futures, trying to imagine the consequence of this possible futures into your company, to your organization, trying not to be reactive to what is happening to these futures and trying to imagine what are the action of other players, the governments, other countries into those futures, and trying to build a strategy for these possible futures. And of course, what is going to be the real future, you will make a mistake. But the clue is to having a strategy that can adapt to any possible future or combination of the futures that you are envisioning. And of course, this demands new skills, new kind of leadership.
You've already given our listeners lots of advice, but if I'm a CEO and I'm weighing up the trade-offs between agility and cost across my supply chain, what's the one insight that you would give me?
I think that we have to enter into an age of diversification, and diversification, it's not only financial. It has also to do with the supply chain and with the way in which I produce. And we need to visualize geographical diversification as another key element of our strategy. You have to realize, and we have to realize, that the Pacific Ocean is not as reliable as we used to thought. And we have evidence that this is happening. And again, the pandemic, again, the wars that we see in Europe can start again in Asia, the environmental challenges, the dependence that we have in critical shock points in our routes. And maybe a final thought is that it is not that suddenly we wake up and we realize that economics didn't work, and it's not that we realize that we were wrong and globalization was a mistake. The thing is that we realize that all the benefits of globalization came with a cost. And this cost was that in a global world, we have global problems. In a global world, we have global pandemics, we have global environmental crises, and we have global problems with our neighbors. And maybe the one reflection that I have is that if we really want to fix this problem, we need more cooperation. We do not need more isolation, and we do not need autarkic countries. We need institutions that manage this global risk, because these global risks are not going to go away. And maybe the problem that we have is that many countries are thinking that the solution for these global problems is going against globalization. And this is not the answer. And again, this is a deeper conversation that countries have to have. At that local company level, or for example, a company level, we are reactive, unfortunately, to this situation. And a company, even if they are multinational companies, maybe they do not have the power to put in the global agenda this additional cooperation that we need. And they have to be reactive. And that's why we need all these strategies that we are talking about. At a policy level, the answer for this global crisis is more cooperation, more integration, more dialogue, not autarky, not the closing of our supply chain, not the fragmentation of the supply chains. But this is the world in which we are living.
That's a positive and constructive note to end on. So more positive open source collaboration, as opposed to the closed mindset that maybe we're seeing in some countries and some policymakers.
That's right.
Thank you again, Roberto.
No, thank you very much.
This interview is part of a thought leadership study created by KPMG in collaboration with FT Longitude.